I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things in a trailer.
I would say we're live, but we're not, because it's recorded and edited for you. This is an immediate post-Goodwood finale download slash celebration.
Well, let's set the scene. It's Saturday morning, and we've just spent the past 2 days at the Goodwood Festival of Speed filming things for Goodwood.
Yeah, kindly asked to work there. Yeah.
So I don't know, by the time you hear this, more of our videos should be up on the Goodwood YouTube channel. At the moment, there's just the Bonhams auction walk around.
Auction.
Where Goodwood specifically said, take your time this year, because last year they'd said you've got about 10 minutes. And someone in the comments said that I looked like an exasperated dad dragging a child around a supermarket. I hope this year's video doesn't look like that, because they said it's okay, just take your time, talk about the stuff you want to talk about, it's okay. So we did that, and we did the supercar paddock, and we did the electric avenue, and we looked at the Ford Supervan 4 and the McMurtry Spearling.
McMurtry.
I knew I'd get that wrong.
Do you know, it's quite a complicated name for, but ultimately, I mean, it's quite a complicated car, but a phenomenal car.
I said to the PR guy, so it's McMurtry, and he went, no, everyone gets that wrong, it's McMurtry. But it was embarrassing because I was talking to him by a sign that said McMurtry.
In huge letters.
And he had it written on his polo shirt as well. So there was no excuse. Pronouncing it incorrectly.
It's because it's not a name that you often hear of. If you're sat listening to this thinking, oh, what are they talking about, McMurtry Spearling? It sounds like, I don't know, the long-lost brother of Norris McWhirter, who used to adjudicate whatever the records from the Guinness Book of Records. But actually, it was one of the most intriguing vehicles off of the Goodwood Festival of Speed and that.
Out of off a bit.
Like, I was watching all the cars going up and that, like doing the hot like lap. But it's not a lap, is it? So it's a hot
distance. It's A to B.
A hot hill climb, that's what I meant to say. And this thing is almost it looks like a half-scale car. It is a real car. A half-scale LM car.
Yes, yeah.
With a single, in a central driving position, a bubble cabin with gulls for doors, carbon fablion, and electric rear-wheel drive on slick tyres with, well, you can talk about the aero side of things.
Oh, the aero's nuts.
Because that's its party piece.
Well, it's 1,000 horsepower, and they say just under 1,000 kilos. Mm. But then it's a fan car, and even at a standstill, it can suck itself to the ground with 2,000 kilos of downforce.
Yeah.
And then the rear wing at speed adds another 250 kilos, I think. But then also, I was talking to someone afterwards, and I was saying this to them, and they went, what happens if the fan fails mid-corner? Awful lot of downforce to lose.
It's a narrow car.
A very short wheelbase. But it's actually got two fans, and they run on separate circuits. It was described to me as aircraft style redundancy.
Yeah.
So if one fan goes, the other fan should keep going, and it can generate 90%.
That's ridiculous.
I know. So they've thought of that, because it would be really bad if the fan just switched off.
Just to put it in perspective of how impressive this thing is, I think this is its first outing, and they haven't quite finished kind of turning it up. It's within 2 seconds of the record, the hill climb record.
It is as we speak, I think.
Oh, probably, of course, we're speaking on Saturday.
Today, they're going to turn us up a bit, and then I think Sunday they'll probably go full kahuna to try and secure, if they haven't already, that record from
IDR. I guess it's the Volkswagen IDR.
Which was driven by... Out of Roman Dumas, off of racing. But the McMurtry Spearling. I think they did the conveyancing on my house.
They're great. They are great guys.
Sweet guys.
British yeah. designed, British made.
There
vehicle.
Is a Mr. McMurtry, isn't there?
McMurtry. it's like a really bad tongue twister that you just can't master.
It's not a Mr. Spearling. Spearling. There is, like, Dave Spearling is not part of the operation. But so, yes, by the time you're listening to this, I'm going to say that they've probably broken the record. The driver of the McMurtry Spearling is Max Chilton, off of brief Formula One career.
BTCC, was he? Did he do BTCC? No, he didn't do BTCC. That's Tom Chilton. I always get the Chilton's mixed up.
Yeah, not to be confused with the Chilton's, the hilly area just to the northwest of London.
That's right.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Oh, we're going to get invaded. We're going to get invaded. The caravan's going to get invaded.
Right, we didn't brief our hosts, Johnny's mate Lewis, who's
wearing terrible tracksuit bottoms, doing some fencing outside.
Actually, I think he's just getting stuff. He's now building building something outside in the paddock.
Here he is.
And hello, we're recording our podcast.
No, it's all right. We briefed the listeners that you were a man in terrible tracksuit bottoms was going to come and disturb the podcast. But I ought to say thank you very much to Lewis and Vicky for lending us once again their showman's trailer. Which is a huge aluminium caravan. All right.
Oh, he's waving.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, please. And that's been our home last night, but the previous two nights, should we talk about this?
Yes.
Goodwood Accommodation, GA.
Yeah, so we were on, I suppose we were on the, not on the staff, but we were working for Goodwood. But the Festival of Speeds has come back very strong, hasn't it? So it's and essentially we said to Goodwood, okay, so if it's the same as last year, we're going to do some videos for us, and have you sorted us out with a hotel room? And they went, oh no, there aren't any hotel rooms, no, they're
all
gone,
booked up,
they're all gone. And and we went, well, where are we going to sleep, because you live 3.5 hours away, and I live 2 and a bit hours away, and it's a bit of a commute to do that. And they went, don't worry, we've got accommodation on site for staff in the stable block. And I thought, ooh, stable block. Converted stable blocks can be, you know, very shishy and nice.
Well, a barn conversion. I had images of barn conversions, which I do like. I'm supposed to be not very thermally efficient, but I do like.
You could probably do something about that. Anyway, it's not for them to worry about, because they haven't done that. I would describe it as functional. But there was a bed. We were in a dorm, basically, but it was just a two of us. There was a bed for you, bed for me, and then four spare beds that we were convinced every night at 3 a.m, like a bloke who was doing the rigging for the stage show somewhere would come in with a bag of cans.
All right, a bag of room temperature lager cans.
And they really froth when he opens them.
Yeah, and he'd insist that we would stop what we were doing and play a little game with him or something like that.
Who wants to play shit? Not really now.
No, it's 3 in the morning, mate.
Didn't happen. For patrons, we'll put up a picture we took, or maybe a couple of them.
We've got a few pictures.
Picture of the room, just to show you that it was basic, but perfectly comfortable. The bed was fine, and it was just behind Goodwood House. So in the morning, you stepped out of the door downstairs, and you were pretty much on the Cartier lawn where all the nice cars were.
Yeah, it was. It was quite surreal. So amazing juxtaposition. And thank you to Goodwood for that, because it was actually quite inspirational space.
One of George Clark's inspirations. I'd probably twitch up some of this plasterwork that's coming off. The location is amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know why. That was a terrible noise. Yeah, I'm so
awful.
Sorry.
It was awful.
I've got a bit of a fuzzy head, I think.
I've got a slightly claggy throat, so I apologise for that in advance. I ended the evening with, chasing IPA with vodka.
So we left the Goodwood site last night. We said a fond, rueful farewell to our Borstal-style accommodation in the Goodwood stable block. And came to stay here in the showman's trailer last night, but we stayed up a bit late with your friend Lewis.
Yeah.
Having fish and chips and drinking beer. And then Lewis went, do you want something else? And you went, oh yeah, what have you got? And the list was Pimm's. And you went, yeah, okay, I'll have a Pimm's. And you were going to have a straight Pimm's over ice.
Straight Pimm's on rocks. I just thought, come on, let's just do this.
And somehow you were talked out of it, but yeah. I would have liked to have seen that, because I think, isn't Pimm's on its own would have been pretty revolting, or just it's, a bit intense?
It's a prickly drink, actually, more than you realise when it's straight, because nobody goes straight on the Pimm's.
It's incredibly diluted, Noel, isn't it? Lots of lemonade and fruit.
So. Yeah, yeah, I think it's probably diluted at least 50-50.
Oh, God, more than that, I would have said. It's like 10 to 1 or something, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Is it like two-stroke... is it mixing my strimmer petrol?
Yes, yeah. Or running a Mazda RX-8.
Oh, yeah.
Put a little bit of two-stroke in there just to keep your tips in
check. Maybe that's what Chardet does.
Well, we were told by that listener, weren't we, that that's what she does, and I don't know whether he was taking the piss.
I just hope she does. She's still not got in touch with us. Oh, actually... Just before I forget, on the thanks front, related to the last couple of days, Andy's Fish and Chips in Chichester.
Oh, yeah.
Got yourself a shout-out, mate, on the podcast, because you're a very hospitable guy. Lovely fish and chips.
That was great. So you've been there...
I've been there a few times. Over a few years.
We went there last year after we'd done Goodwood on Friday night.
Yeah.
And he was excellent and... really, really nice chat while we were waiting for our fish and chips to cook. And then last night we walked in and he basically did the, I've been expecting you.
It was brilliant.
We had a good chat. He made us some brilliant fish and chips for us and for Lewis.
Insisted the money went to charity.
Yeah, wouldn't take any money from us. No. But we wouldn't not do that. So we agreed to give the money to charity, which we did in his little charity thing.
Yeah.
Collection pot.
So Andy's Fish and Chips off of Chichester.
Yeah, a good fish and chips as well.
Yeah. That's the thing. A quality way to end a week,
Well, also, I have to bring this up because I'll be honest, it amuses the crap out of me, is yesterday morning's breakfast.
Oh, not
again. Your champion's breakfast. Not a champion's breakfast because...
That's a loser's breakfast.
We hadn't really been drinking. It was just a... There are not... See, that's my stomach rumbling.
Is it?
We're talking about food and it's like, oh yeah, hi, wow. Hungry.
It's like thunder.
We've only just got up really, so hence there's a bit of clagginess. The vegetarian options at Goodwood are not great, and you're a veggie, aren't you? So it, I had a bacon roll for breakfast and you were looking for something, not an egg sandwich because of the risk of yolk burst on a shirt that you've got to wear on camera.
Yeah, well, so I've got, and my only option really for veggie breakfast on the run at that point was a double egg bap.
Which I tried to persuade you could just eat shirtless by a bin as the crowds entered Goodwood.
Which that would be weird. I should have done in hindsight. I should have actually done it.
Or lie face down on a picnic table with your shoulders hanging over the edge so that you're eating and every bit of egg is taken care of by gravity away from your shirt.
That would have been a good idea.
But you didn't go for either of these, I thought, helpful suggestions, and you finally found a place that did duck wraps, but they had a vegetarian duck substitute option. And so you had that massive duck wrap for breakfast.
Well, I did both, didn't I? So I got day before yesterday, I got egg on my, a bit on my a shirt.
Oh, I'd
a bit on my trousers, and then a bit. You said it was in the yolk was in my beard.
You were rubbing it. So, you basically made scrambled egg in your beard.
So there were people wanting to come and chat. And it just looked like I'd been sleeping in a hedge around the back of Goodwood. And then yesterday, I thought, well, I don't want that again because the egg was traumatising for me. I went for a vegan duck wrap, which was tasty. Not breakfast material usually.
I mean, I wouldn't call it a wrap so much as like a burrito.
It was a burrito.
It was like they gave you this thing, and it was like they'd wrapped a sleeping bag in tin foil.
Yeah,
and I mean, it did look quite tasty.
It was
lunch dinner.
It was comprehensive. It was more lunchy. Yeah. But the worst part of it was, I thought, okay, this is great because it's a contained unit. It's going to be fine. Again, different day, different shirt. Actually, also different trousers.
Mm.
We hadn't even started filming, and yeah, I was just finishing off and I looked down and I realised it had been carefully drizzling hoisin sauce on the bottom of my trousers and on my suede shoes. What? It's like, I wear suede shoes twice a year. Why now? Why now?
And then The slow unfolding of the horror when you realised that in fact your hands were covered in hoisin.
Why?
You didn't have a napkin.
No, I didn't have a napkin. And I have to apologise to anyone that came up and wanted to shake my hand or Richard's regarding.
Well, no, but I didn't have hoisin sauce on my hands.
I had to make an excuse about why you couldn't shake my hand at that point. Really, like some fantastic. Sort of weird diva.
And you were getting really cross about the fact you couldn't find anywhere to
couldn't
clean
find a tap,
off your
just,
hand.
Just needed a standpipe.
If you were passing by the, just near Goodwood House, by the big centrepiece display of BMW M cars, and you saw Johnny Smith of The Late Break Show and Smith and Sniff crouching down, rubbing his hands on grass.
I was doing that.
That's why hoisin sauce didn't do the job. And then we're walking to where we had to go to start filming. And you were cross. And you're going, what if someone wants to shake my hand? And I was like, well, just say to them, sorry, I've got hoisin sauce on my hands. Because it's such a weird excuse. It's not the kind of thing you'd make up.
Oh,
it's just, you might as well go, sorry, I've just got guinea pig entrails all over my hands. And they'd go, oh, that's a bit of an odd excuse. It must be true, because who the hell would fabricate that? And then sure enough, people were coming up and going, hi, hey, Johnny, hey, love your videos. Can I show you? No, you can't.
No,
hoisin sauce.
Bloody hoisin sauce. And I've got it on my trousers as well and on my blessed shoes. So anyway, enough about
hoisin sauce.
Do you know what I've got to say? I'm a bit like, stop laughing. I'm a big fan of striking the car up and letting it settle for a minute while you plug your phone in or set your destination or get ventilation preferences sorted.
Yeah.
And in that same way, I'm a massive fan of breakfast before I leave my premises.
Yes, I'd forgotten. That was the other thing that was vexing you, wasn't it? The fact we had to walk and eat.
I don't really like walking and eating because I'm not Brad Pitt in Ocean's 11.
I don't think it's good for you, is it, walking and eating?
No, of course
it feels
it's
like
not.
It probably isn't.
Well, no, it's not. You don't refuel your car while it's rolling along in D still, do you? You've got to chase it around.
Apart from those sort of world record attempts from the 40s where there's always like a Morris Minor driving into some kind of elaborate rig that's so that it's still rolling on the track, but they're putting fuel in at one end and cleaning the windscreen, and there's all men in brown store coats doing that.
Is this brown store coat?
Always brown store coats. Even though it's black and white, you know the store coats are brown because of course they are. It's 1949,
the
40s. So that was, I'm not going to say it's one of my highlights of Goodwood.
In fact, that's what I'm going to do next time. I'm going to arrange with Jensen Button, possibly Ant Anstead as well, because he'll be able to help with the rig of the situation.
We saw Flant Flanstead, didn't we?
We did.
A few times. In fact, there came a point where it seemed like he might have been stalking us, because wherever we went, lo, there he was.
I think three times I spied him.
Yeah, well, there's one point where he did just sort of appear as if by magic. And go, all right, boys. And it's like, what are you doing around here, Flanstead?
He's a good lad.
Yeah, it was nice to see him.
I think what I'll do next time is I'll set a time with them at Goodwood and say, I will meet you at these, and I'll give you what three words. And the what three words will be, Johnny is hungry, or breakfast for Johnny.
Hoisin sauce hands.
And I'll get there at the coordinates at the exact time. And think of it as a pit stop. Yeah. So Ant will lift me up off the ground so I can rest my legs, and I will sit in cradled in his arms.
He looks like, he could do that.
He could do that. Yeah. He works out.
Yeah.
And then while he's doing that, Jensen will just feed things into my mouth. And I'd like a selection. I'd like muesli and I'd like some fruit. Possibly some, like a live yoghurt. So you can do that.
Are there
not hoisin sauce.
I wonder if there's any skilled artists listening to this who could create this in Microsoft Paint or something. The image of Johnny being carried aloft by muscular Ant Anstead whilst Jensen Button spoons muesli into his mouth.
whilst being overshadowed by the M Sport sculpture.
Yes.
M Sport sculpture where there's an M1 dangling above our heads.
Yes, upside down.
And if we do it inside of a year, I'll try and get much more match fit. So I will take off. I'll be wearing a very, very white linen shirt for Goodwood duties, and I'll quickly remove it just before I reach the coordinates of the what three words where these boys will meet us. I'll throw it to you.
Okay.
So I'll do all of the above topless.
Okay.
And
you've been really hitting the gym. You've been on the Flanstead plan.
I'll be impressed with myself to the point where I'm willing to expose myself Yeah. Not like that. But Goodwood's on. Yeah,
don't, please, anyone thinking of drawing this, do not draw
on the wall. No, don't. I'm not going to be outside on Lord Charlie March's lawn with the lot out, as they
bag
say.
Out.
Yes, I'm not seeing. Hey, hang on a minute. That there's a fan car over there, and there's a guy trying to make a fan using skin over there. No, that's not it. Skin fan.
Skin fan. What was the thing that was making us laugh hysterically? Oh yes,
flesh door. This is so odd. This is so odd. It has to be explained. So on the Cartier Stile Luxe lawn, if you've ever been to Goodwood, there's a lovely lawny bit which is a concours, and there's always groups of cars that have been curated.
Mm.
And one of them was sort of pre-war elegance. I forget the exact words. Was it avant-garde?
It was Les Grands Routiers. Celebration of pre-war elegant automobiles for the super rich of Europe, particularly France and Italy. So there was a sort of Pininfarina or Farina-styled Lancia and a little Farina-style
Delahaye roadster thing. Yeah. And
a Bugatti Type 57 with an elephant skin interior.
Yeah, amazing.
Which was remarkable.
YouTubers of the time really favoured that.
Yeah. Hey guys, I'm thinking of wrapping my seats. What endangered animals should I have killed so that I can upholster
I've got manta ray headrests in this one.
Yes, I've got a whale's eyelid glove box cover. So what brutal and horrible thing should I do for the seats?
Hang on, what's that? Is that a handbrake? Well, it used to be, it's now a snow leopard's leg.
Yes, this indicator stalk is a koala's rectum. Don't forget to send me a telegram if you wish to express your enjoyment and a subscription service to future videogram messages. Toodlepip!
Art Deco influencer.
Ahoy, hoy, guys!
Yes. Word up. We've taken...
I think... don't forget to express your enjoyment and take out a subscription. God save the Queen!
That's right. I've been driving as fast as I can through Paris wearing my panda jumper. No, actually, it wouldn't be a jumper, it'd be a blazer. Yes. A blazer made of a panda's skin. And I'm going... Anyway, let's shelve this for now. The reason why we're saying this is because there was an incredible car called a Bucciali.
Yes.
Or Bucciali.
Yeah, I don't know.
B-U-C-C.
I think it's Bucciali, and I hope so, because that's what we said on camera.
Yeah. From a company, a very pre-war company called Buck, B-U-C, a Parisian company. And this thing, unlike a car I've ever seen. It looked like it a huge saloon that had been roof-chopped, kind of Bentley-sized almost.
Oh, God, it was huge, wasn't it?
Yeah, with you said, they looked like lorry wheels, grand wheels, and double spare wheels stacked on the back, girder-style bumpers, with Art Deco adornments on the side, polished
sort of
stainless.
Flying swan, huge metal sort of thing.
Made of copper or brass or something.
Yeah, I think it was mixed metal.
Mixed metal.
Sort of brass colour and then a silver bit. But
it was amazing.
Extraordinary. But then it looked like it had been like chopped, like hot rodded, didn't it? Because the roof was so low, but apparently that's how it came out. But then it had a V12 and front wheel drive. Which apparently was Bucciali's thing. And they did, they experimented with 6, 8, 12 and 16 cylinder cars, all front wheel drive. This one was a one off and it was made in 1932. The company went bust the following year, and then in 1936 it suffered a catastrophic gearbox failure and couldn't be used anymore, and of course the warranty department had closed. So
and then the war came
and spoilt the fun of the super rich who were commissioning and driving these insane cars. But this Bucciali was apparently called the flesh door.
Yeah, honestly, we were reading the literature before we had to present on camera about these beautiful cars, and I just read it out loud just to confirm that I wasn't seeing things. It said flesh door, F-L-E-C-E with a French accent on the E.
Was there an H in there?
Fleche door. And then D apostrophe O-R.
Yeah.
Car door, the ice cream.
Yes. No, car door is something that stops you getting drafty while you drive along, isn't it? Cart door.
Oh, cart door. Okay, that. But this, I'm sure it's called Flesh Door.
Flesh Door.
Which I thought, A, it sounded like a specialist club. but isn't it? You just go, I've got a membership. Yeah. I'm in with the Flesh Door.
There are lots of people in leather shirts.
Yeah. Or somebody threatens you. If you do that again, I will destroy your Flesh Door.
I just liked it as an insult.
You flesh.
Absolute Flesh Door.
So this vehicle was referred to as the Flesh Door, which...
an amazing thing.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, not to be too shameless in the plugging, but if you go to the Goodwood YouTube channel, hopefully by now, our Cartier Lawn
chat
film... chat, wander about through various lovely cars in different categories. We'll be up there and you'll be able to see this incredible Flesh Door.
What incredible Flesh Door.
Oh, what a remarkable Flesh Door that is.
And it was parked next to six, yeah, it was half a dozen McLaren F1 cars to celebrate the 30th birthday of that car.
From which we noticed that 90s graphics were... They look very dated and 90s now, don't they? But one of the guys on our crew...
Who was born in 2001.
Yes. Yeah. Damn his youth and vigour. And he just thought it was cool. Because he doesn't remember the 90s because he wasn't born then. And now the 90s are kind of back in fashion and things. And he's just enjoying it all for the first time. So he thought these sort of graphics...
Wishy-washy graphics.
Yeah, they are. They're sort of very soft. So there are a couple of the... There was a GTR and then a long tail as well, and they were, because they're racing cars, they were covered in some pretty piss poor graphics. Well, I thought they were, but
I liked one of them. One of them looked, remind me of a pair of swimming shorts that I used to have.
Yes, they were swimming shorts, or just sort of something you'd have seen in a Benetton shop.
I like those. But there was the gear knob that got us going on that particular one.
Yes.
So one of these McLaren F1 GTRs...
It was the long tail, wasn't it, I think?
It was the long tail. Had a gear knob off a Mark 1 Golf GTI, you know, the dimpled golf ball knob. And we were thinking, if you had a £30 million car, would you take the original gear knob off and think, no, I'm going to put a gear knob off from a mass-produced hot hatch? Because I think it might be a bit more... It probably is more tactile. Actually, I don't know. If you're listening, I'm sure it isn't more tactile.
No, well, I was thinking about this. I wonder if Gordon Murray would approve, and I think it would all come down to whether it weighed more.
Mm.
But I suppose at the same time, you know, Gordon Murray is a pragmatic man. If you argued that it gave you better grip and therefore you could do fractionally quicker gear changes...
The lever could be moved faster.
Then he'd probably acquiesce to your demand to change it. But now...
Oh no, I know what you're going
to
say.
Are we allowed
now
to talk about the this? I'm not going to categorise this as one of our bollockings. This was not a bollocking. This was more of a sort of stern go away. We discovered that on Thursday night, Gordon Murray was holding a Q&A for Goodwood members.
Yeah.
In what was that place called?
Kinrara,
that's it.
Which sounds like you're saying a swear word, but just shortening it.
Yeah. A TVR we never got to see, the Kinrara.
Yeah.
It was just an event space, basically, isn't it?
They've
given it a slightly sort of pompous name. So, he was doing a Q&A in there. And we found out about this. We were like, oh, well. Because we now technically live at Goodwood for a couple of nights, we're going to be on site. We're not leaving when everyone else leaves.
No.
We'll be in the area.
Yeah,
we could just go along. And our contact at Goodwood tried to sort it out, and he couldn't get hold of anyone who could actually just put us on the guest list. So we thought, screw it, let's just try the door.
So I did.
Well, you did, because you're braver than me. I sort of stood behind you looking nervous.
Yeah, you did. You didn't back me up, you both.
Well, what was I supposed to say? Because the lady on the desk, there was one person, we went, hi, yeah, we're actually from the media. We wondered if we could actually come in and hear Gordon's Q&A. And she went, oh, hang on, this is the person you need to speak to. Led us up to a desk. There was a stern lady there. You went, hi, yeah, we're in the media. We just wondered, we're working for Goodwood this weekend. Could we come into Gordon Murray's Q&A? And she just went, no, it's a ticketed event. In such a stern way.
And she didn't blink.
Total unblinking eye contact as well.
Yeah, I was a little scared.
I was terrified.
Yeah, a little scared.
And we immediately, there was no, you know, sometimes someone go, well, I'm afraid the thing is. And you go, no, but seriously, we'll just stand at the back. We are journalists, we're professionals. We do know Gordon Murray a little bit, or you do. There was none of that.
No.
She shut it down so fast.
Yeah. I was going to be like, you know, the sort of troublesome person that intervenes at a wedding ceremony. And I was thinking of just as Gordon's about to start at the back going, God, we had that chat about Honda Insights. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Like in 2015.
Just shouting from the back. Gordy!
And we had a good laugh and you gave me quite a bit of time. And then you remember that time I came and filmed with you with the T33 and you said, oh, can you come back and we'll chat about your Lancia? No, you don't remember.
I would have liked it if before security could bodily pull you away, Gordon had stopped his Q&A, walked to the back, and embraced you heartily like a long lost friend.
I'd like it. Give me the hand, you know, the sort of
oh, like
Top Gun style grab.
Yeah. That would have been nice.
And he'd bring me in, and he'd point at one of his minions,
big back slaps,
and he'd be like, "Just get him a
this
seat.
Guy's good.
Get him a
He's
seat.
With me."
Yeah,
and that's it for the rest of the evening. You just plied with canapes till you burst.
And I'd offer him, I would have brought him a gift just in case this situation arose, and it would be a carbon fibre yard of ale. What? Or a Kevlar yard.
Now, I don't know stuff like this at all, but it's sort of my vague belief that different liquids weigh different amounts.
Yeah, be densities.
Yes,
were thought.
Because we touched on this once in the podcast, and we said something about fuel weighing the same as water, and a few people did, I think, correct us and say it doesn't weigh exactly the same as water, petrol. So what's the lightest liquid that you could put in your... It wouldn't be ale, because I imagine ale's quite hefty.
Oh, it's probably a little dense. Yeah, wine would be more dense than ale.
Yeah, I still think it'd be... I just wonder if it's something like, you know, sort of deionized water or something. Champagne. Oh, the bubbles.
There's lots of air in it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, or just water that you've put into a soda stream machine and then held the thing down for far too long, so it's incredibly fizzy. But Gordon doesn't know that, and he goes, oh, thanks, Johnny, thinks it's ale, does it in one, and then just has horrible burps for the rest of his Q&A. Every time. So
he's just becoming his own fan car, using front and back orifices. He's proper backfiring for the rest of the event.
I think our attempt to get into the Gordon Murray Q&A, it would have never come off because that lady was so stern and so firm. But I don't know that our case was in any way strengthened by the fact that you were holding a bottle of Heineken.
Oh, yeah, I was.
That you'd forgotten that you were drinking from. Because that nice guy from the Honda Civic Tuning Company.
Oh, yeah, Dream Automotive.
He was a lovely chap.
Phil,
and he said, do you want a beer? While we were talking
We were looking at his Time Attack Civic, which is an absolute weapon.
That sounds to me like you've said time attack, like T-I-M-E-R.
Time attack.
Time attack.
Other herbs are getting really pissed off with this event.
Time, I see time.
Yeah.
No, I mean timer because attack, like a little nail that you would use to fix down a timer.
No, it's time attack. You go into a field and you've got to whittle out all the other herbs and only find time. So there's been other rogue imposter events that have taken place. I'm trying to think of what they would be. Well, you got paprika drifting. What else have you got?
A bit of special stage rosemary.
We've all been there.
This is all very. Oh, we were there and you weren't, but we were at the same time. Don't think we were living a glamorous life on Thursday night when we were.
No, we've got pictures to prove that.
Turned away from Gordon Murray's Q&A by a stern lady. Only doing her job.
No,
it was a private event for Goodwood members. We weren't Goodwood members. We were two idiots in contractor wristbands because that just got us in everywhere. And one of them was carrying a half-drunk bottle of Heineken. So, but then the evening, it got better because we suddenly realised, well, we hadn't had anything to eat. We were sort of hoping if we get into the Q&A, there'd be some nibbles or something.
Yeah. Super leggera food.
Of course.
On very small plates with very small forks.
Just, a lightweight paper plate with half a bag of Skips emptied onto it because they are very light.
They're so light. They blow away in the wind.
So then we had... We were wandering about because, of course, if you're familiar with Goodwood Festival Speed, the site is riddled with, you know, places selling burgers and
food
pizza
vendors.
And stuff like that. But not at night because there's no one there, so they close. Of course they do. We saw one that still had people in it, and we went up to it, and the bloke immediately just went, "We're closed." And I was like, "But where do we get food?" And he was very nice, but he just went, we have nothing, we couldn't make you anything if we wanted to. So we wandered about. There's that Future Lab thing on site, and we realised they were having an evening reception, and we could see people in there drinking flutes of champagne and eating nibbles.
Trays were being brought forth.
And then we encountered those guys from Arrival, the electric van company.
Yeah, and I wanted to have a quick sit in the Arrival van, because it's going to be, you know, a big deal. And while we were chit-chatting to them, they said, wow, we might be able to get you in there, we might be able to help. Don't worry, this is not an illegal move. I'm not calling them out. They were brilliant. We saw where these people were coming out with trays full of food, and I intercepted.
So yeah, I think that the food was being prepared in another building, and then walked across the grass to the big Future Lab thing. And so we just intercepted a waiter.
And we did. We got a few,
take some food.
Got a few micro plates of delights.
It wasn't much, though, was it? It was a tiny little bit of tuna and then some vegetables. And
there were some slices of Tiff Nadell's jacket on my plate.
Yes, was it a radish? Tiff's jacketed some radish or something.
They had, yeah, and. And that was great. And when we finished what we were eating, I thought, I've got to give the plates, the cutlery back. And that was our in.
Well, no, because first of all, hadn't you, that guy from Arrival, because I'd gone to the loo, and when I'd come back, I'd noticed some trays of pudding going in, and I wasn't quick enough to intercept. And then the guy from Arrival went, oh, don't worry, I'll sort this out. And he sort of trotted off very briskly and then came back, hands aloft with a couple of puddings, which was great.
It was great.
So we'd had a little bit of sustenance, but then obviously our eyes were on the prize. It was like, if we can get in there, maybe we could have a glass of champagne as well and look at all the Future Lab stuff that we hadn't had a chance to look at earlier on. And yeah, taking the plates back was a good cover.
We went in straight in, no one blinked, because we had plates that matched the plates of others.
It checked out.
And we put them down, and Rich immediately looked at me and went, keep walking.
Yeah, so don't waver. Part of the thing of doing stuff like that is to look like you're meant to be there. So we did. We just walked in, and no one stopped us. But they had stopped serving food and drink because it was sort of wrapping up. But we did get to look at some of those cool things, including that Boston Dynamics bloody dog thing.
Oh, robot dog. Really freaks me out. Crazy, sketchy dog.
Just clomping around an enclosure and then coming up to you and bowing a bit. And
it was
a bit weird. And then sort of I think they do this deliberately because they know that Honda's now cancelled Asimo project. His natural nemesis seemed to be stairs, because although they'd often show him going up and downstairs, they would also have moments where Asimo seemed to be falling downstairs a lot. Oh, if he was an elderly relative, you'd have got him a stair lift by now.
Poor old Asimo. He's being, and also people prefer dogs. You know, the Instagram prefers dogs, so Boston Dynamics have gone, let's just make a robot dog, even if it's slightly sinister.
Slightly sinister.
What is it? A Labradoodle wanker cross?
Headless Alsatian. but they had the little flight of stairs, like sort of three or four steps in this enclosure that it was padding around in, and it would just every so often just go up the stairs and come back down again, just to show that it could. But I noticed over in the corner where all of the sort of hardware related to the robot dog was running, there was just a laptop with "Stop Robot" on a big red screen, which I presume is and it had got one of those sort of red all stop buttons on its back, hadn't it?
Panic button.
Well, you asked them, because there's those videos of someone kicking one of those Boston Dynamics dogs,
which really doesn't fall over. It scares me.
But did you? I thought you asked them, didn't you, about could you kick it?
Yeah.
And that one wasn't a kicking one.
No, it wasn't. Maybe sound like a robot cruelty.
Can I
expert.
Go into the pen and kick it? No, it's not a kicking one.
If you don't understand what we're talking about, just type Boston Dynamics into YouTube. And there's ones where a robot is stacking and moving cardboard boxes.
Mm.
Okay, full of stuff. It's supposed to be like a picking and packing factory simulation. Mm. And while they're doing it, they're moving the boxes as it crouches down to pick it up to see if it'll spook it. Yeah. And then picks it up, and then he's smacking the big boxes out of its arms. It's been very cruel. It's like a bully at work.
But I suppose that's the beauty of robots, is that they won't lose their temper.
No. No, but us, with our natural emotion. So we watched that, and it was fascinating. And then we saw that Saab are building submarines, which is very cool.
The other bit of Saab,
yeah,
the bit that also builds jets, I suppose, isn't it? Not the car bit. But then we we saw it. Now there's a chap we know called Gary who is works at Goodwood, but is in the car industry. Or was in the car industry in manufacturers and used to be the PR at Saab. And absolutely loves Saabs. Loves them with a passion. It wasn't just a job for him working at Saab. It was, you know, he was really invested in it. He loves the Saab. And we saw this Saab submarine, immediately went, oh my God, we know who'd love that. We didn't even have to say his name to each other.
No, we really didn't.
And then the following day, we bumped into him.
We did. And we said, hey, Gary, I bet you've seen that. And he went, yes, I have.
You didn't even have to say, you just went, hey, Gary, have you been in the Future Lab and seen that? He was like, yeah. Straight off.
And we were like, so you've seen, yes.
Yes.
You know about it, yes.
And then, because we were in the middle of trying to film something, so he was like, we've got to go. And he's like, we'll talk about it later.
Like it's some sort of sinister fetish.
Yeah.
But it's okay. So that was cool. So I'm trying to think of the other things, because there's so much at Goodwood.
Well, then on Thursday evening, not to just keep talking about us, but fuck it, it's our podcast. after we'd then scrounged some food, like street urchins, and snuck into the Future Labs reception and looked at a scary robot dog, and then you got to go in that funny AI, well, not AI, was it? The simulation, the tracking, where it's body tracking, and you stand within that thing that's got four cameras on you.
Yeah, that's right.
And then it projects on a screen your movements, but you're an astronaut on the moon.
Yes.
And the guy was quite impressed. He said most people just wave their arms around, whereas you started to really pretend to be on the moon, and you were sort of trying to, you
know, trying to method act.
Zero gravity walking around the place, and it was quite good. And then we decided we'd go back to our borstal, and there was a party at Goodwood House, not the Goodwood Ball that happens on Saturday night. This was Thursday night, BMW event, because they were doing 50 years of M cars. And it had been, I presume, you know, some very delightful dinner in Goodwood House.
But then that's right.
Everybody was coming out of the front of
Goodwood 50 House. 50 Jahre M-Sport.
Das Fascination!
Yeah, for sure.
And so everybody was coming out round the big sculpture on the front lawn, and they were gathering because they were going to put on a fireworks display, and there were tables of champagne with people serving nice champagne.
There was naughty quantities of Veuve Clicquot,
huge amounts.
I'm not a big champagne person, but I do stop for a Veuve Clicquot.
This is something I only learned about you this week, that you don't much like champagne, but you do like Veuve Clicquot. So
I do.
I'll bear that in mind for future reference.
Thank you. Please can you.
And if I end up becoming your manager when Late Break Show becomes huge, and I'll be sort of backstage at the, you know, Birmingham NEC when you're about to put on a massive show, just go, what is this? Moe? You know he doesn't drink Moe, for fuck's sake.
God, three bottles of Mum. Yeah. I'll trade you.
Yes, Paul Roger, I don't care if it's nice, he doesn't like anything but Verve. So we went, oh, now, if we just sort of casually mingle with people, perhaps we could mingle towards the tables where the champagne is and just get a cheeky glass of champagne. The flaw in our plan was immediate.
Oh, gosh.
Everybody was in black tie except us.
Yeah.
We were just wearing shirts and jeans. I thought that I would look more authoritative / like I worked there by putting my hands behind my back as I walked along. Somehow gives you a kind of headmasterly sort of bearing. I don't know what I was thinking.
Pathetic.
I'm very tired. And
like a strange clergyman, I thought.
Yes, it had a sort of ecclesiastical style to it. Anyway, it didn't work. None of it worked. Because when we were walking up, we were just lingering by, muttering to each other, so we thought we might look like security, and we're just sort of swapping notes on high-risk situations. And then before I knew it, you just sort of peeled off and gone straight up to the table and taken two glasses of champagne.
I thought I'd grab two flutes, I'll go and grab two flutes off the table, and then I about turned to give you one of the flutes, and there was a security guard straight in my face, like they'd appeared like a phantom.
Turns out the real security were also wearing black ties,
and they were on
with the guests.
And he just went, "Excuse me, sir, have you been invited to this event? This is a private event." And I stared at him, and when you have a second to decide, am I just going to lie my way through this, or am I just going to come clean? Well, I just went, "No, I haven't been invited at all." And he went, okay, in which case, you can't drink that, so you need to put that down and leave. And I did. That's what I did. I went, I'm ever so sorry. I put the flutes down and started walking away.
Did it flicker across your mind just to down one of them? Or spit in them. So, well, you can't give them to anyone else now. You might as well.
It was the walk of shame. The table where the champagne needed to be returned to felt like a really long way away.
It was only an arm stretch away.
It felt really. We've all been there, haven't we? Where we tried to get away with something, blatantly lying or just being naughty. And then you just go, you shouldn't have done that.
But then there was a little sort of extra bollocking because then another security guard came up to us as we were doing the walk of shame away.
Yeah.
And went, you can't stand here.
You need to get off the premises.
If you want to watch the fireworks, you've got to go over there behind that rope.
Yeah, there was just a thin rope. And it was like, get over there. Anyway, so that wasn't great. But we did get to watch some drift cars, some BMW drift cars.
Oh, yeah, they brought that drift cars and then a fireworks display. So,
yeah.
But we had to do it from leaning against some bales.
A piece of rope.
Behind a sort of rope of humiliation, whilst all of the people in dinner suits and evening dresses quaffed delicious Veuve Clicquot champagne. And it did, this suppressed class war warrior in me welled up, and I suddenly thought, these, look at them, come the revolution, these people's blood will be spilt on this lawn.
I just wished I hadn't ever tried to do what I did.
It was... I just
thought of happier times.
What, when we were in dinner suits drinking champagne? Because let's be honest, we have done
we
that.
We went from a hero to zero.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we sort of trudged back to our room lit by a single fluorescent tube and plugged our phones into my 6-gang extension that I'd brought with me because someone from Goodwood said in advance, I said, is there anything else you need to bring? They went, oh, well, there's usually only one plug in these rooms and people always mention it. There's never enough plug sockets. So, you know, if you've got one of those adapters that's multi-thing. And I was like, oh, I don't, but I've got a 6-gang that I'm not using. So.
Richard did bring a very practical, like, Argos extension.
Quite well used as well, you'll notice. That 6-gang's seen some action.
Yeah, that's done work.
I can't think I've ever taken it to the full six. Yeah. Which, ironically, you always have to take another plug adapter.
Oh, yeah.
And then other ones in case you're plugging in local electronics into the UK spec 6-gang. Oh. But, yeah, I was very proud of my 6-gang because it was just a practical thing to bring in a bag of otherwise just clothes and stuff.
The thing I enjoy about going to working at Goodwood is you get to see some of the setup, you know, the behind the scenes stuff.
Mm.
And when we turned up on Wednesday night, you could see there were the owners of the McLaren F1s.
Yeah.
Trying to manoeuvre these cars in pitch dark.
Pitch dark.
With some of their mates with phone torches on around.
Yeah.
And because there were no overhead lights at all. And you think, bloody hell, you wouldn't want to casually back one of those into a bollard or another McLaren.
Yeah.
That would be a bit uncool. And then you saw the guys from Singer.
Yeah, when I arrived, just before you, that Singer, that gorgeous Singer Turbo Study, is it called? The 930.
I've been called that.
I've been described
as a Turbo Study.
Yeah. Honestly, I'd say he's more of a flesh door, but yeah, Turbo Study is definitely one of those.
What about the flesh door Turbo Study?
The flesh door study sounds like something that a proctologist would have to do. So
50 Shades of Wrong.
So that lovely 930 study was bang outside the door into our digs.
Mm.
And it was, when did I arrive? Sort of 10:30, and it was dark. Near as damn it, and they were still finessing it. I think anyone who's ever encountered Singer, and particularly Rob, who owns Singer, is the boss of it, is a perfectionist. So anything less than absolutely perfect for that car at its sort of public debut wouldn't do. So they were sort of still just with, again, phone torches and actual torches. And then later on, I noticed they'd pulled up an old Range Rover like mine, and it was just sitting there with its engine running with the headlights on, just to give them better light to get it up onto the stand, because it was on a big plinth.
It was
to drive it up.
Sexy plinth.
And but that's what that was still all going on at sort of 11:30 at night. It was a lot. It was great. It felt like, because that was Wednesday night, so it was the show opened on Thursday morning.
Mm.
And we felt like we were just seeing a little bit behind the curtain, because there was lots going on late into the night. And you could still hear sort of like you can hear on this podcast, actually, because someone's building
some
a shed.
Some cordless drill assembly.
Yeah, there was a lot of that going on. And it's quite thrilling, because you feel like you're seeing something that most people don't get to see. So that was quite nice. And the next morning, we got up and went outside. By the time we sort of went outside, there were already people there. I didn't realise it opened so early.
No, I didn't.
7 or 7:30. And then,
did we talk about getting video bombed by Nigel Mansell?
Oh no! I mean, well, so we, when we started, Thursday morning, we went for a little briefing from Goodwood people about what we were going to be doing for them, and they casually mentioned, "Oh, Nigel Mansell's here for the whole weekend."
We were like, "Can we talk to him?" And they quickly went, "No, no, you won't be near him. It's okay. Yes, just don't even consider."
We've made
that
a specific note to keep you and away from Nigel Mansell because we believe you to be silly twats.
Yeah, which is fair. I think that's a fair assumption.
But well, also because we, in front of them still, which was possibly foolish, we developed the how quickly can you offend Nigel Mansell game, which was that we sit down for the interview and then you've got a time. How long will it take before you say something that enrages Mansell to the point where maybe he leaves the room?
Oh, it would be too easy.
I'd have gone in on Tiffany Dell because he's still sore about the touring.
Apparently he still doesn't talk to him.
Mm.
Yeah.
But then we realised as well, of course, you could bring up that time at Le Mans that he didn't even do a single lap. Didn't complete a single lap before retiring. That would have probably riled him up a bit.
That was odd.
And then also he binned a car going up the hill at Goodwood many years ago.
Did he?
Yeah. I think it was an Indy car. Someone showed me a clip on it. I was talking to someone who showed me a clip on
his
phone.
It was
couldn't quite
car.
Work out. It was a very low quality clip, but it looked like an Indy car. So we didn't get access to Mansell, but then we were quite literally doing piece to camera in front of that Ford Supervan 4, and our guys from our crew and a couple of people from Goodwood who joined us to see what we were
check
up to.
Check that we were doing what we were supposed
were
to be doing.
Were doing crowd control so that we had sort of clear air just to talk to the camera without people walking across our shot. And suddenly, I saw Georgina from Goodwood try to
block.
Stop this sort of surge of a knot of people coming across the paddock.
Yeah.
And I saw her go to try and stop them, and I saw her kind of suddenly actively retract her arm from stopping them. And it was Mansell in the middle of a sort of entourage being led at speed across, they just crashed right through our shot.
It was the Mansell wearing one of his old race overalls and had the moustache.
The classic Labatt sponsored.
He had a cap on as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
Did he have a Labatt's cap?
No, I think he had the tweed cap.
Oh, yeah, the cap. And so the tash, the cap, there were sunglasses and the original race overalls. Mm. And then a swarm of bees after him.
We looked back at it on the monitor to see if you could tell that it was Mansell on the shot that he walked through. And you definitely could because he was dressed as Nigel Mansell. But in a weird way, it almost looked like, you know, something we could have set up with a lookalike. Because you put a moustache and a cap and a Labatt's racing suit on anyone of about that stature and they immediately look like Nigel Mansell. But we're assured and we believe it to be the real
Nigel
Mansell.
I've actually got a flat cap in there. If I put that on and
I've got to an age where I quite fancy a flat cap, but I'm not sure I could pull it off.
Well, I'm balding, so I have to pack a cap just in case. Because you just never know anymore.
Johnny's now rummaging in his bag to find the cap so that he can wear it. So if Johnny sounds different in a minute, it's because he's wearing a cap.
But if I sound a bit different,
it's going to be all squashed if it's under everything
it's
in there, isn't it?
It's a terrible mess in here.
So yeah, that was exciting.
We ran up the hill yesterday.
We did. Straight to number one up that hill. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I've seen you wearing that before.
It's a classy item.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's got a bit of.
So
can I try it?
Does it work for you?
I don't know.
If it'll fit, but yeah, actually, that
does it. I think that's all right. I've only become a hat person in later life.
I've always
thought I looked like a knob end in hats, but I've started just wearing hats and not caring. I'll wear a cap to go on the school run or something if my hair's all sticking out.
I do a cap.
Oh, that's interesting. Richard, tell us more about that.
Said no one.
Look, I'll tell you, give you a choice, listeners. It's me just wittering on about wearing hats, or I can do a bit of a rubbish name drop. Actually, no, not a rubbish name drop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this counts as a name drop because it's someone who you actually know, but your friend and late break show contributor, Shaky Byrne.
Shaky Shane Byrne.
Who I've never met before. What a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a dude.
And I'm not a biker or a bike fan particularly, so I'm just sort of dimly aware that he's a multiple British Superbike champion.
Yeah.
And you pointed out 6 times.
Yeah.
And he went and got us a coffee each.
He did. He's lovely.
And I just
he's lovely.
What?
We had lunch with him.
Yeah.
In the driver's enclosure area at Goodwood. And
which he also got us into.
Yeah.
We didn't have access to that, and that would have been another humiliation and a bollocking on the horizon. But no, he just sorted it out and we went in with him.
Well, we had to talk to a couple of people from Honda about a feature coming up on the show.
Well, you did, and you were chatting to them when we were sitting around a table, and the Honda people were standing behind you, and you were having a good chat to them. And then an elderly gentleman came up and asked if he could sit at our table because he'd just got some food.
He had a curry, the same as me.
He had a curry. And it was legendary racing driver Richard Atwood.
Yeah.
Off of Porsche 917s,
yeah,
amongst other things. Now, I've met Richard a few times before. He's a lovely chap.
Yeah.
So that was why he came over. He saw a face he recognised and he just went, "Do you mind if I sit down?" And then we had a nice chat. But the thing about Richard Atwood is that I don't know how old he is, but he's incredible because he still drives, and I think he can still get a strop on when he needs to in a car. He's never lost.
He's still got the magic. And he's an older chap.
Yeah. And he's quite well spoken. And we were having a good chat, but what we realised, or I realised about Richard Atwood, is that he does excellent swearing. Because he doesn't swear a lot, but when he swears, he puts a lot of weight behind it.
And he's very British.
He's very British. And he's also an absolute hero because he tamed the Porsche 917. And many of his fellow drivers lost their lives, or in some cases, sort of flat refused to drive those cars in tricky conditions. And Richard lived to tell the tale and is hale and hearty. And
he is a dude.
But we were talking about technology in cars, and he was saying, "I'm not a Luddite. I like technology where it's appropriate and useful." And he was raving about the Tesla touchscreen. He'd never driven a Tesla until recently, and he said it was really good. And I got familiar with it very quickly, and I found it very, very user friendly, and I liked that. But and then he went, "But in so many cars, these touchscreens, they're too fucking complicated." And I was just completely blindsided because he speaks so nicely.
He's an
and
old then he's guy just throwing out swears.
Yeah, it was great. That's my name drop. I had a nice little lunchtime chat with Le Mans.
Well, I'll do a name drop because 5 minutes after that, when Shane and I were still chatting, then John McGuinness pulls up.
Oh yeah, ranting about the price ranting of about red the price
about the price of cherry diesel,
cherry.
And then a couple of minutes after that, he ended up getting trolled by Dougie Lampkin. So within minutes, Richard, who doesn't even know anything about motorbikes,
but I know who Dougie Lampkin
was surrounded by some of the greats of motorcycling.
And there was, I don't like the word banter, but I can't really describe the conversation that was going on behind me any other way. It was a sort of good-natured ribbing and back and forth.
Yeah,
people with good comic timing just having at each other. And there was it was quite
but
nice.
But I think there's a lot... It's great when there's people who are obviously either at the top of their game or have been.
Mm.
So there's that mutual level of respect of, like, I know that you've been capable or are capable of great things.
Yeah.
But we're just going to talk about something completely normal, or just take a piss.
Well, that's it. I quite like it. Sort of legendary people who've done the things you can only dream of and shown bravery you can only imagine, and then they're just ranting about the price of cherry.
It's just brilliant.
They're people just like us. But I thought that. I was thinking, well, they have been at the top of their respective fields.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that you would get any F1 drivers talking like that.
No, maybe.
Touring car people, I imagine. Potato have been in there, and Matt Neal and people. There would have been a lot of that sort of stuff. But Lewis Hamilton, I like Lewis Hamilton a lot. I'm a fan of his work, and I met him, and he was very nice. But I couldn't imagine he'd go and get us a coffee in.
Lewis, if you're listening, we'd love to do a Smith & Sniff podcast from one of your houses or one of your garages or even from the back of one of your cars. That sounds wrong, but I don't mean it like that.
Well, I think, we'd certainly waive our usual no guests rule for if Lewis Hamilton wants to come and talk shite in a showman's trailer.
Yeah, we will not talk about Formula One, just so you know.
Yeah.
We will not talk about Formula One. That's what makes it different.
Well, I did that once. I went to the Monaco Grand Prix on a junket with Renault because they were still... They still had a Renault-branded F1 team back then, about 2004, I think. And they said, "We've got some interview slots with the drivers." I was like, "Oh, I don't really have anything to do with that." So I spoke to Evo and I said, "I've got some time, sort of 10, 15 minutes with the Renault drivers. Do you want an interview?" And Evo went, "Not really, because we've got an F1 correspondent and we kind of were good. I don't really know what we do with it." But they went, "Just go and chat to them anyway and see if you can get a column out of it." So I thought, well, I'm not going to go, "How are the tyres? How's qualifying for it? No. Was it? It's like they're A, they've been asked that 1,000 times, and B, what am I going to do with that in a column that will come out a month after the race? So I thought I'm just going to ask them about real life.
Yeah.
So I sat down, Yarno Trulli and Fernando Alonso were the drivers, and it was quite interesting. Alonso didn't get where this was going at all. So I was going, so guys, what supermarket do you shop at? And what do you do? Do you tend to do a big shop, or do you just nip in when you need stuff?
Is that what you asked?
Yeah. And Alonso was just like grumpily sitting there signing a load of caps because the PR was hovering over him, making him do double, you know, double work. Trulli, what a dude.
Yeah.
You could tell he was a bit in like, supermarket? Oh, you saw. And then it's sort of like the penny dropped. He's like, okay, this joker's not going to ask me about qualifying. That's okay. I'm going to run with this.
The guard is going
10 minutes off. 10 yeah. minutes away from having to talk about the bloody tyres again. And so he started getting into it, and he went, well, you know, it's another, and I went, what would you cook if you're just going to make a quick meal? It's a Wednesday night. He goes, and he's like, yeah, well, I don't know. Yeah, no. And Alonso's just ignoring all this. He's just signed the cap.
Is he? Did you even talk to him?
Well, yeah. And then suddenly Trulli went, he said, he accused Alonso of just microwaving stuff, and suddenly Alonso's in the conversation because he got very defensive. No, it's not true. I have a microwave because I warm up tortillas and then I
really? Yeah.
And it was great. And it was quite illuminating. And then Alonso sort of went back to being monosyllabic and not really into it. But Trulli, he gave me, I think we had about 15 minutes of just chat about normal stuff.
Did you call it Trulli Madly Deep? Did you? I hope you did. I just hope you did.
He was a dude. After that, I was always quite like Trulli, but yeah, after that, I sort of was like, I was always rooting for him. Just
that's what,
like,
F1
needs.
He's
a good guy.
It needs a bit of that, though. It needs a bit of, like, you know, John McGuinness moaning about the price of red diesel.
Yes, exactly. That's it. Go now, Lewis. I know qualifying was tricky for you. The car's still not working well. We're not going to talk about that. Have you ever had cause to buy red diesel?
Oh, it'd be great. Have you ever bought a scratch card for the national lottery? You know when you pay for your fuel, you've bought your Super Unleaded, and you thought, oh, I might need a little bit of bit of chewing gum because I've had onions for lunch.
Yeah.
And while I'm in there, I'll probably, you know, bit of this, bit of that. But yeah. Scratch card? Do you just think, ah, bollocks?
No, I'll have it. Come on, I'll go for it.
Euro Millions.
Give us one of those. Yeah, Euro Millions, because that's the big one, isn't it?
Because you go, well, hang on a minute. I've already got millions.
Yeah.
So, but I could just buy one, support the cause. I don't know.
Do you think he's ever just going, oh, screw it, I'll buy a Twix? And you go, oh, no, now I'm going to have to go to the gym for another 2 hours.
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Fingers of Twix.
I don't know if the F1 drivers do snacking. They
don't
must
think
they
do. No, I don't.
Don't
think
you think?
They're so highly calibrated now, I think.
Calibrated, I love that.
I don't know, they just eat bloody pasta with grilled chicken all the time, don't they?
Who knows?
With any of the F1 drivers, probably, I don't know, except Stroll, then we could talk to them about this.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it would be enlightening. Yeah. Do you just eat grilled chicken? Isn't it a bit boring? Do you ever just go for a Nando's because at least they put spice on it? I sort of imagine I could see Hamilton in a Nando's, actually.
Could you?
Yeah, because he's from Stevenage, isn't he? And it's just like there's not a lot else to do. Go to that big shopping centre.
Does he still own a house in Stevenage?
I don't know. I think his dad lives there still. I'm not sure, actually, but he did. So yeah, I could definitely, and I also could see Jenson Button in a Nando's.
Button would do Nando's.
Button would definitely do a Nando's.
Yeah, he would. Button would do Andy's fish and chips.
He would.
That's the kind of guy Button is.
Given Flanstead's general stalking of us, it was a bit amazing not to walk into Andy's and Andy go, oh, guys, I'm really expecting you. By the way, some friends of yours are already here, and you turn around
in the back room where they're
just sitting on that windowsill where you can wait for your chips. Just turn around, there's Flanstead and Button just sitting there. All right, lads,
we're keeping ours wrapped because we're going to walk around the corner and have a few cans in the memorial garden.
Jensen's already got a bag of cans with him.
Jensen's like, you're from Somerset, I've got some Thatcher's Gold in a bag.
Jesus, yes.
I'd love that. Couple of cans with Jensen.
We should probably start to wrap this up because, well, apart from anything else, I feel like I need to go and have
a coffee. Yeah,
I'm not quite a DEFCON can of Coke, but I'm not far off.
DEFCON cola.
I did have quite a few beers last night, and we have been working in inverted commas for 2 days straight and sleeping in a young offenders institute. So, you know, these things stack up. But
car of the event for you, for Goodwood. Any vehicle could be even a contractor's gator.
Oh God, yeah. Well, That's really difficult because there's so much nice stuff, so much nice old stuff. I mean, we had, our eyes were on Storks, weren't they? So we were doing just some of those rally cars, just old.
You know, like the little weird, the little mid-engined, early mid-engined.
Yes, yeah, the all those ones on the Cartier lawn. There's, they did the sort of early, the dawn of mid-engined road cars. And so they had René Bonnet, Digette, and
that's right.
Lotus Europa, and a Unipower, and a Di Tommaso Vallelunga, which is a very pretty little car owned by Gordon Murray. He's got one, not the one that was on the lawn, but he has got one, I think, because he likes them because they're little and light.
Yeah,
that I don't know whether I'd fit in one, but Gordon Murray's a tall chap and he's presumably weak. Fits in it, and so yeah, that would be one of my highlights. I just think they're so sweet.
Well, that's
sweet,
just sweet his cat. Fitness regime. He just pushes it in and out of the garage.
Bloody hell, we haven't talked about how we met Quentin. Well, met. We know Quentin, but we bumped into Quentin and we had a lovely chat with Quentin.
Captain Wilson, yeah.
And then we did it, and he went, would you do a little thing for, he was shooting stuff for what he's doing.
For his own outlets.
For his own outlets. And he went, would you be interviewed on camera? And we went, yeah. And he went, he asked us a sort of broadly philosophical question, because it was at Electric Avenue. What does a CV display mean for Goodwood? And then we talked for about 10 minutes and he went, that was great. Could you do it again, but shorter? Like, much shorter. Okay.
Great. Quentin's a dude.
It was lovely to see Quentin. Haven't seen him for ages, so that was nice. Again, just a little cheeky name
but just
drop.
Just to counterbalance the EV chat, we did briefly talk about the AC 428 GT,
yes,
which is one of
his favourite cars,
auction cars, and a lesser seen beast.
What
very,
would your
very cool.
What would your highlight be of the weekend?
That's a really good question. Seeing it in the auction, and it was the last car we saw before we left the event last night, the Alpha Montreal.
Oh, yes.
In that strange colour, but yes. Alluring colour. I've got such a thing for Montreals. I suspect they'll be disappointing to drive, but yeah. I just think it's such a cool car.
Mm,
so that turns me on.
Do you know what else I liked is that Singer 930. I just love the fact that you glanced at it and you go, oh, there's a 911 turbo from the 80s. And then you just sort of go, well, why does it look better than other ones? And it's so beautifully done, where it totally keeps the spirit and the look of the original, but somehow it's just neater and tighter and it sits better. And it's just, and I reckon if you put an original next to it, the original would look really gawky and sloppily designed. And it's just that Singer thing where nobody does attention to detail like they do in design and execution.
No. I think just for the sheer hilarity of the way the suspension was behaving on the hill climb would have to be Travis Pastrami in his Subaru GT. Was it called a Subaru 1800 GL? 1600
yeah, yeah.
GL?
Yeah.
Which is obviously like a sort of mutant of a car, a Hoonigan kind of project.
Mm.
But obviously on soft rally suspension.
Oh my God. Everywhere.
Breaking into the corners. I thought the back was going to sort of like somersault over the front of the car. It was so loose. And it was great to watch. He was obviously on it, as they say, with his sequential box. And that was really cool to watch. And I loved watching the Ford E-Transit.
Yeah.
So the Supervan is back. And that's
2,000 horsepower. And it was going up the hill like a freaking scalded cock, and it turns out they weren't even running at full power. It's about 1400, they said. They're gradually turning it up through the weekend. So as you listen to this, you may have seen it if it was going up the hill on Sunday. In fact, you won't have seen it because it would have been going faster than the human eye can register if they got it on the full 2000. Ridiculous thing, but I love the fact they've done it because it's just a bit daft. So
and driver Roman, obviously I don't think he quite understood the cultural references, but Ford said, not only do we want you to set a PB in this van, but we also want you to wind the window down, point and shout at people as you're going up through the corners, but I want you to also really aggressively eat a Twix or a Yorkie bar, and you need to get rid of all the safety equipment. I want you to just wear a pink Lacoste shirt if that's all right.
I do gather that Ford are paying Dumas cash in hand.
Oh, he says
it's very much off books, but you know,
there's no VAT for this particular job
because
bless Dumas, he's just said yes to all of the above just to get the job done.
Just
to get it all. So
trains!
Good. He's also worried about his neck strain pre-event.
He's doing a lot of, you know, the racing drivers do that neck work, don't they?
They do
weights
network.
On helmets and stuff.
We're doing it now as we're talking.
I know, I don't know why. Anyway, so it's not a visual
medium. And they also gave him, they gave him a little round of applause when he used the F-bomb in the... because he says it just before the word transit.
He's been getting swearing training from Richard Atwood.
He probably is.
Because Richard, you know, it's like he's got that racing driver's discipline just to deploy it when necessary and not elsewhere. Just keep it. It's like sort of knowing when to get back on the power through a bend, knowing when to use the F-bomb to maximum effect, which he did. Magnificently.
He really did.
Romaine Dumbass, as I imagine some Americans might call him. No disrespect to him. He's a legend and a record holder. Well, maybe not by now, in fact. Maybe.
Well, this is where it gets interesting.
By the time this goes out, his record has been stolen by the McMurtry.
Spearling. Thanks to everyone that came up said hi, said thanks for the podcast, and just wanted a little catch up and a chat or a photo.
Yeah, we gave out a load of stickers, which was delightful. I particularly enjoyed people who sidled over and just went, "Oh, sod."
Yeah,
and I enjoyed them.
I believe
palming
you've got
them,
something for me.
Reverse palming them a sticker.
Yeah, backhanding
like
a sticker
provincial
out of
drug
his
dealer.
Pocket.
Yeah,
yeah.
But lots of people just came over to have a chat, and it was really nice to meet some listeners. I particularly enjoyed the chap who we later talked to properly, but when we were running down the hill, and I was ahead of you because I got a bit of a head of steam.
Well, you're fitter.
I run probably more than you do at the moment, so yeah, I just sort of got a bit of head of steam downhill and wanted to sort of enter the bottom bit where it flattens out, and people had started coming in for the day, and I wanted to basically enter that bit like a hero, really going.
Is that
for
what
it.
You did?
No, I didn't, because I didn't want to like break an ankle. So I kind of came in quite hot, and there was a guy who just walked in and he saw me and went, "Richard," and I felt like I was in a marathon. Because I've never had anyone sort of shout my name while I'm running, and it felt quite good.
Well, I was unblocking my DPF valve filter at that point. I was hoping that no one would recognise me and just shuffling along.
Yeah, we sort of messed up there. We didn't want to be spotted because we went for a run just as they'd opened the gates. So basically we went up to the top of the hill, came back down again to find there were lots of people.
Going up that hill is really hard on foot.
It's really interesting to do it at a lower speed than in a car, because you get to appreciate more of it, and also a gorgeous view from up the top.
Yeah, well, it was stunning.
Anyway, that's quite enough of this. It's just name dropping and talking about us getting told off.
Well, it's a Goodwood special.
It's a Goodwood special. We'll be back to business as usual next week, whatever that might be. In the meantime, I have three things to tell you. They are: one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Baked Quake Show, in which Johnny plays 90s video games while extremely high on marijuana. If you don't like that, then there's always The Late Break Show, which has got lots of excellent car videos on it. What's up at the moment? What would be you?
Well, you've got the Barn Find Sierra XR4.
Oh, yes.
Where the guy casually mentioned he had another Barn Find while we were filming the Barn Find. That was good. Mm. And there might be, by this point, what I think will become the world's quickest street legal electric car, which is built by two brothers in Hungerford in the UK. So that'll be up there.
Okay.
Might even be another one. I'm shuffling the running order at the moment. But anyway, just bloody watch something. All right, thanks.
Second thing I've got to do is that I have various books out. One of them is called Boring Car Trivia 3. It's the third in the Boring Car Trivia series, but you could guess that from the title. And the third thing I've got to tell you is that 15% of England and Wales is unregistered land. Somebody owns it with the Land Registry, just don't know who.
15%. That's
a lot, isn't it? 5.2 million acres.
Can I own some of it?
Unregistered.
And then I would be classed as a landowner.
Yeah.
And
I suppose you are, aren't you? Do you own the land that your house sits on?
I do.
There you go, you're a
landowner.
That's
why I wee on it. On my own compost heap to start the process.
The process. Excellent. Well, thank you for your patience in this croaky, slightly fuzzy and self-indulgent showman's trailer episode of Swift and Sniff.
This was... I'm going to shake this.
Got a bit of the brute spolt in
that
the house.
That was brute spolt.
And we'll be back to business as usual next week. Until then, thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye. Itchy scrotum.